Every morning, find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I seen. Life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me moaning. Every evening, find me moaning. I'm alone and crying the blues. I'm so tired of paying these dues. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Lord, I spend plenty of days and nights alone with my grief. But I pray, really and truly pray, somebody will come and bring me relief. Every morning find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I seen. Life's a losing gamble to me. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Leave me feeling my own, let me stay found
lonely. Musician, composer, band leader, and vocalist Jose James with the popular song Moanin'. This is from his 2008 album, The Dreamer. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, well, I don't know if you could call it good news, but some news. But it is not complete news, but it's some news that police officer Pantaleo, the one we saw in that video choking literally the life out of Eric Garner 5 years ago, has been removed. He's been let go from the force. Now, let's take a short glimpse into this. We'll get into it in greater detail, because we've discussed certain aspects of it already. But I go back to the idea that this was not a regular trial. This was a departmental hearing, it wasn't quite a trial, but they will call it that. And so we had the phenomenon of the police commissioner technically becoming a judge in this case. And that is something that should worry us all. I talked about it in great detail, how this case went through several irregular permutations, lots of avoidance in order not to find a police officer guilty of killing someone, and especially an African-American someone on Staten Island, Eric Garner. We had quite a few twists and turns in this case, including the critical issue of whether this was a chokehold that Pantaleo applied on the neck of Eric Garner. A chokehold was a procedure that was banned by the police department. And he maintained that this was not a chokehold. It was a seatbelt. It was called a seatbelt maneuver. A different kind of hold to subdue a difficult to control person. So all of these things are now back in play. But I think it reached a point where the absurd contentions by Pantaleo's lawyers just simply couldn't pass muster. So we had the ruling today that Pantaleo is off the force, which was one thing. But it's not the only thing, and that's the next leg of this struggle. There are many other things that should be tackled and resolved. Because, as I made the argument initially, how did this case, which would seem to me and to most rational people, this was a criminal case. But it turned into a departmental hearing. And with the police commissioner having the same say as a judge in the case. That is very disturbing. That should not be. The other thing is, in this case, we saw 5 years, 5 years of resistance to what should logically have gone on. The U.S. Department of Justice took a hands-off position. The courts of New York took a hands-off position. The advocates, the advocates for justice in New York took a hands-off position and entrusted the case of an officer killing a citizen of the city, entrusted that power and authority to an administrative procedure. And this was, to me, the most appalling thing about this case. The most appalling thing about it. Because what it signaled was that systems, such as the police department, are inclined to work behind the scenes to accomplish nefarious ends, which eventually they had intended that Pantaleo should walk free, even in the face of documentation, even in the face of a video showing what happened. They were going to make up reasons and argue the fine points and basically do it at the expense of Eric Garner. So there's much more we need to discuss about this case. But the news is that Pantaleo has been let go from the force. What we should also keep in mind is this isn't over. And we shouldn't give anybody the indication that we consider this a done deal. Justice has not been served here. The penalty for Pantaleo shouldn't just be that you lose your job because you willfully killed a man under the color of authority, and the authority being your police uniform. Well, he wasn't wearing a uniform on that day. He was in undercover street clothes, dressed like, you know, they looked like a pack of hooligans, all dressed in black and, you know, giving the impression this is our world. And we make decisions in our world, even if the decision ultimately is to kill you. We can do that because we are so sure that the higher level of our enterprise, they will know implicitly that they have to protect us. Observe the code of honor and protect us. So we'll get to the root of how it is that we have this change of heart and how it is that Pantaleo now is off the force and having to give up his desk job of more than $120,000 a year. that was his reward. So there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen in the aftermath of today's news that Pantaleo is gone off the force. All right, what I want to talk about today is really getting a sense from you, your own analysis of things, as to what at this time do you believe is America's greatest threat, America's greatest challenge. There are reasons that if you've been following our discussions and the topics, we're leading somewhere. We're going somewhere. It may not be immediately apparent, but you'll see. We are taking our time and we are reassessing things, re-examining our attitudes, and coming to new understandings about things, because it's way past time. And because we have allowed, whether, you know, we did this intentionally or not, but we seem in many cases to be holding to the standard opinion. And we are debating each other in terms of a standard opinion. Our job is to examine that standard opinion for contradictions. And as we have seen, there are many. Most recently, we re-examined this idea of what exactly is white supremacy. And I think you would agree with me, the standard interpretation of it, the standard definition of it, what we think of it, is far different from what it really is. And when we get to what it really is, we come to a whole new understanding about the systems with which we live, under which we live, and how they impact directly and indirectly our lives. So this is the question I put to you today. What would you say? Not what the newspapers say, not what the television anchors say, not what the experts say. You have a mind, you have a brain, you can think. And you can think independently of whatever it is being offered to us as, you know, something approximating the truth. Let's discard that for the moment. In fact, let's discard that as a matter of course. You set that aside, you listen to what is said, and then that gives you a point of reference of trying your best to come to a different understanding. And this is where I think we can begin that process as well. What would you say is America's greatest threat? What would you say is America's greatest challenge? Okay? You tell us from your own perspective. Because I'm going to ask you to define your answer to get closer to helping us to understand how you are seeing the world in which we live. What do you say is the greatest challenge? What would you say is the greatest problem, the gravest threat? All right. Moki from Connecticut, we will start with you. Welcome.
Greetings.
Greetings to you.
Thank you. Hope you're doing well, physically and spiritually.
Well, actually, I'm not. I've been saddled for the past 2 weeks with a very vicious pinched nerve, and it's killing me, but life goes on.
Well, if misery truly loves company, I've been recovering from a serious case of food poisoning, but I'm well enough to talk with you and the audience today.
Right. So
It
let's
was
get to
more
the
than what
question.
it was.
What would you say is America's greatest threat? What is America's greatest challenge?
Well, I want to respond to your introductory comments about Pantaleo first, and I'll try to do it very quickly. Before even this incident with Eric Garner in Staten Island, and I lived in Staten Island for 7 years when I was attending the City University of New York. I couldn't look it up while holding the line to talk with you, but I believe the gentleman's name was Walt Chamberlain. If I get the name wrong, forgive me, but he was living in White Plains, a veteran and a retired corrections officer. Accidentally rolled over in his sleep and pressed the alarm button on his emergency alarm. The police responded by forcing their way into his apartment and killing him. I was beside myself. And then hearing about Eric Garner, what I want to say about that is I'm happy that Pantaleo has been let go, because now this probably paves the way for a civil suit. For a criminal suit, rather.
Well, we should be very upset about that, by the way. It shouldn't have taken 5 years and lots of protests to get this thing done right, and done right from the beginning. It caused thousands of people, not only in New York City, but all across the nation, to hit the streets to make it clear that this is a problem and the way they're handling it was wrong. So not only was Pantaleo wrong, and a judge finally admitted it, but Pantaleo was lying, but that this process, the whole process, why does it take 5 years? Why should it take 5 years and a lot of battling over something that any reasonably well-educated person in the law could see where this thing went off? It went the wrong way. So that's my issue. But let's get to the subject at hand,
okay?
Because I'm a stickler for that.
Pantaleo was, forgive me, but Pantaleo
no,
was, hide, he was hiding behind a blue line. I really, it's important that I say this. He was lynched. Pantaleo's arm was the noose. Them trying to call it a seatbelt maneuver even points more to the fact that his arm
but
was
if
a
you, if you
noose.
Don't mind, I want to move on to the topic that we had for today. We'll get to Pantaleo probably tomorrow.
No, I'm done
but today
with
I had in mind to talk about the threats or the perceived threats to America. And how we see it. What do we see as America's greatest, gravest threat? And what do we perceive as America's gravest or greatest, sorry, challenge? Let's go to that.
Sorry to put it this way, but a bunch of Satanists are running the planet. Can I be any more succinct?
No, you haven't been specific. I didn't ask what was the greatest threat to the planet. I asked what was the greatest threat to America, in your view. And
well,
what...
it's systemic. With the greatest threat to America is also occurring on even higher levels. So you can look to what's going on in Europe and the rest of the world. You can look what's going on to what's Google shenanigans in China.
Yeah, but you're not on point. I'm sorry to say today, Moki, you're not on point today. I'm asking a very specific question. I'm not asking about China. I'm not asking about the rest of the world. I'm not asking about Satanists. I'm asking, what, in your view, is the greatest threat to America? And what do you think is its greatest challenge right now?
It appears the greatest threat, direct threat, is a handful of strategies that are performing what I would call slow genocide. We can go on buying cars, a new dishwasher, going to drive into the gas station, but we're dying slowly because of, well, no one's looking up in the sky, for one thing. If you look up, you'll see what are not, clearly not, jet vapor trails. So between the geoengineering...
What we'll do is give you some time to think this through, and maybe you call back tomorrow and be on point. That's my main stickling issue. You got to be on point. So you're a little bit off today, but thank you for getting us started. Khalil from South Carolina, what is America's greatest threat as you see it, and what is its greatest challenge?
I'll be succinct because, you know, corruption is corrosive, and it's corruption. And all these things, in my mind, all these things that you have been talking about, like for the past year and a half, whatever, excuse me for being so casual with my language, it's corruption. Because corruption is corrosive, and what it does is, for people who are paying attention, what it does is it erodes confidence in our system that we know to be America, how America's supposed to work. It's corruption in the fact that people in Congress pay. They actually have to pay in terms of their fundraising to get on these committees, to be the head of a committee. I just found that out a few days ago. That's disgusting. It's corruption in the fact that we have, at minimum, a two-tier criminal justice system, one for certain people and one for other people. Sometimes it's based on ethnicity. Sometimes it's based on social class in terms of how much money you make. But it's, at minimum, two-tier. The president of the United States is corrupt. He breaks the law every day. The attorney general, we've been through two or three attorney generals. They've all perjured themselves. That's corruption. That means there's no rules. When you're this corrupt, there are no rules.
Okay. And have you thought beyond it as to what a possible solution could be?
No, I really haven't. It's just because every time I get ready to formulate a remedy, it seems like it just gets worse.
Well, I'm with you there. But corruption, you see that as, like, how would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10? Is that the top or is it at the bottom to 10?
It's at the top. If this president cannot be held accountable for his misdoings now, then when? And that's it starts at the top and it goes all the way down. Redlining. I mean, redlining is corruption. People who pay to get what they want to a zoning board, that's corruption. You know, our vote doesn't count anymore. Maybe, you know, you're onto something. So that's my two cents. So, disgusting.
Well, you did very well in zooming in on the number one issue in your mind that afflicts the country today.
Hope you
Dallas
feel better.
From New York, you're on the air.
Great, Therese. I'll be brief. I'll just simply state it's just the erosion of values, of moral values, of decency, integrity, honesty. We're bankrupt. We're going to implode from within based on the way people think and what seems to be normative behavior.
And when did we have these values? Morality and...
Well, it's individual. I mean, we can't basically say a whole nation thinks the same way. It's on an individual standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, based on, you know, your culture, your race, how you were brought up, all that factors into what's your moral code and whether you have one to begin with. So until we sort of swing back to some sort of humanistic values where, you know, it's all about embracing and being fair and equity, then we're in trouble. We're going to be like Rome, just destroy ourselves from within. We don't need any outside forces to do that for us.
Okay. I quite agree. And we've commented on it many times, talking about what the heck is going on in Washington and in state legislatures and in city halls across the country. When people are complaining about this very thing, that government seems to have lost its moorings, and in so doing, America has lost its way, at least its concept of where and how it ought to operate, you know.
Agreed.
Okay.
That's the point.
So,
that's the problem.
That's what you're communicating.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you.
Right on point.
You have any ideas at the moment as to how this could be fixed, if it could be fixed? Oh, she's gone. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air. What would you say, your perspective? It doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be wrong. It just has to be your view.
Do you think poses
the greatest threat to America? What do you think is the greatest challenge to America?
Well, I'm going to take a cultural anthropological approach to this, and that our greatest challenge is really this country has to find out who it is. I mean, we're devolving into different tribes and factions, and there's now a real sense that we're very fractured, and it's not getting any better, and things could get a lot worse if this is not addressed really quickly. And so basically we have to find out really who we are at this stage, and that's going to take some real soul searching and just some real effort to really communicate and to listen to one another. And in terms of the greatest challenge to America, I think that this country has to really learn how to approach itself in the context of a global, of where we are globally, how we're going to get along with other countries and really reestablish ourselves as leaders and as partners with all kinds of nations, those emerging and those already who are well established. So we have a whole lot of work to do. And I really appreciate this approach that you're taking. It really takes me back to my seminars at Yale and really having to go deep into real thought and reason. It's very, very instructive. And I know it's a challenge, you know, because people want to get on sometimes and just spout off, you know, their opinions. But these times require deep thinking.
Do you feel that on either level, in terms of challenge or in terms of threat, that regaining ground?
I don't feel that at this point. I think we've lost ground. As, you know, I think it's been happening even before Trump, even before Obama. It's been happening for about 20 years. And it's going to take some real effort for this country to see itself in the 21st century in terms of what is really necessary to be humane and to really be able to exist in the world of nations as we attempt to move forward with so many challenges that just confront the entire planet. And this country, it can happen, but it's going to take will. It's going to take a real lancing of a lot of pain that has happened, and a real addressing that in a serious manner to really begin to heal and to move forward. And that's gonna be hard. It's not gonna be easy.
No, it's not. Do you think we have what it takes to get close to an answer on either ground in terms of what threats America faces and what challenges it faces?
Presently, I don't think we're there. There's too much loud shouting and you know, in the media and just and all of the information that's being sort of spouted out there. We need a quiet period to go inward and to really do some deep soul searching in terms of historically, culturally, politically. And I really don't know if this country has the capacity to do that right now. I think things might have to get a lot worse in terms until we can get to that point. We're so beaten down and bedraggled that there's no other alternative but to just be still for a moment and try to, you know, really be present and try to learn from, you know, the mistakes that we've made.
All right. Well, you're putting us closer to the subject, and I greatly appreciate it, because I think, you know, we have to ponder these things. And then we will see examples all around us as to the reality that we actually are living and how it compares with the way we are thinking.
Definitely.
Thanks so much, Bill, for your call today. Gino from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Good day, you two. It's been a little while. Oh. Been listening, but I haven't called to give others room to call. I wish some others would listen to that and give other folks a chance to speak up throughout the country. So, thank you. Yes?
What would you say is the greatest threat to America? The greatest challenge to America at this time?
Okay, I think the greatest threat is the greatest threat in the history of the humankind. I think the greatest threat, as your last caller said, Bill, I think we have a spiritual problem, and I think the solution, which is a challenge, is a spiritual solution. It isn't just talking about it. It's about applying it, like you did in your own life, to overcome what they gave you a death sentence 6-7 years ago, and you proved them wrong. I think that the good news is that people are getting into yoga, right, at hundreds of thousands, if not millions. I think some are taking it further and doing the meditation, and some are acting in their own life and getting off of a system of debt, not only debt, but debt, of the conditioned mindset they gave us to what we're supposed to be eating compared to what we really need. So I think it's a personal thing. It's an individual thing. And I have to say this. I've been observing your show, I've been observing Gary's, and Gary's on about the quacks, the atheists, the Kabbalah atheists who are very arrogant in their approach and denying anything spiritual. But I got to say this, he promised 7 years ago to make a movie on Edgar Cayce. I point this guy out because he gets so overlooked, because he's been so documented. And even though Benjamin Bannister and the running gets notoriety, or the sports figures, at work, I work around 500 people. They can't name basically 5 contemporary spiritual giants within recent history. I mean, I'm talking even like 4 decades.
But you're edging close to the, you're edging off the map. Stay
no,
on
I don't
topic.
Think so.
I want to hear from you personally, what your thinking is.
Well, my
greatest threats confronting America today, the greatest challenges you think that America has to deal with today.
Well, you're speaking about, I mean, it's not changing from what I answered before. You're speaking about government that's run away because of big business not caring about us, and they're kowtowing to the dollar sign, the old struggle between money versus human life. Monsanto and Roundup and this and that and this and that and the vaccinations, and we're so free, they want to take away the freedom. We're in fake wars. We're killing women and children day and night. We should be walking around with sackcloth, these government officials, what they've been responsible for, the debt and murder that they've allowed to happen. So it's a spiritual problem. I'm not talking about churchiality, just like you. I left it, but I've taken up the promise of that individual who gave his life 2,000 years ago to help wake us up. And I've just read the book. I've been out with an injury for 7 months. First time in my life, I've read the whole Bible. And I see the truth about eating a vegetarian diet from Genesis. I see the truth about meditation. I see the truth about just being loving. On my block, all I can do, you know, I helped this fellow. We got a little garden going. I gave him some seeds. He's got a beautiful garden out front of his building, which is beautified. I pick up the bottles when they're on the street with young kids throwing them there, so the little kids don't get hurt when they're running out there with the you know, getting wet with the water pump, the animals that run by that can get cut. I do my part. If I see something in the building, because I don't want the kids thinking that's normal, and they grow up with you know, thinking that's normal and make it worse. So it's
all right.
Like the little thing seems little, but they're not little. But again, the greatest, I advised you once before, there's an author, Sidney Kirkpatrick, New York Times bestseller, who wrote about Hitler and murder mystery books, true stories, and he went to disprove the story of Edgar Cayce. And just to end up on this, Utrice, if it's true that a man can lay down with no education and no more than anybody who went to school, and it was documented from the New York Times in 1910, two pages in every major paper in every state he lived in, it proves that the invisible world is real and it's intelligent, and that these people who don't think that karma is as real as gravity, these people who think they're so powerful, that they're going to face what they put out one way or the other. And if you got the eyes to see, you could see, like Papa Bush, who died, he was already in hell. And most of these people already are there. And they don't believe that where they're going.
Thanks for calling. We have to stay on topic. We can't stray. It's something that's a big deal to me. Just stay on point. And we can always come back to what else you say, but stay on point. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. What, in your view, is America's greatest threat and America's greatest challenge?
Right. I'll try to stay right on point. I don't want to waste your time. As I see it, it's very clear to me that the ruling class is on track to do what it wants to do. To me, the greatest threat in the United States of America today is the ruling class that is on the high-speed train track to accomplish its goal, which is to make more wealth for itself and impoverish the rest of the people. So the greatest threat is the strength of the ruling class even increasing more to benefit its main goal, which is profit for itself and poverty for the rest of us. That is the greatest threat during the near future as the ruling class picks up steam and goes ahead and enriches itself every single day. Now, on the other end of your question, the greatest challenge, as I see it, is what the people can do to change the system that we have now. The system that we have now cannot be reformed. We got to do something else to change this rapacious capitalist system that is only interested in enriching a few to something else. The structure of the government, the way things are in terms of all the different parts of the government, the legislative, the executive, the judicial, all of that needs to be changed. And that is our greatest challenge. Without changing those things and changing them around, not just reforming them, we're going to be in a terrible position with the ruling class still in power and doing what it is doing now. So that is the way I see it.
All right. Got it. And clear as a bell. Thank you so much. Albert from New Jersey, you're on the air. What would you say is America's greatest threat, and what is its greatest challenge?
The greatest threat, and I'm convinced of this after a lot of deep thinking, is the unbelievable cognitive dissidence in this country. And I say that because there's a lot of background behind it, but essentially I have seen, and I don't understand how it works totally, but our only answer is going to become when we get to a point where we can honestly discuss what really goes on in this country versus what people think. Now, I bring that up because it's so subtle that most people don't realize it. And my quick example is when I was growing up, my family always told me, I'm black guy, oh, you know, son, you're good, as good as anybody else in the world, blah, 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 blah. Okay? And then when occasions came up, whatever, I had conversations with my parents, and I realized how much shame they faced in trying to explain to me how I was not as good or considered as good or acceptable as a certain group of people. It presented a shame to them. They didn't know how to deal with it. They did the best they could.
Stay on point. What?
Yeah,
because you started off very powerfully.
The
government, and just stay on the point.
Yes, the government and all the institutions that you could name have this big problem. What they think and what they say and what they do are not just two, they're three different things. And the only way, this is the perhaps a solution, and I haven't formulated this yet, is that we are going to have to get ourselves, everybody, to a point where we're thinking basically the reality of our situation. Because I see every day how comments are made by national media, by the Joe Blow down the street, that have nothing to do with the reality of, one, this country was built on supposedly the Constitution and freedom for all. Well, that's a grand idea. But if you really look at the reality of it, it never really happened. It wasn't even part of the real goal, really. And yet,
so summarize your point. You were talking about two main points.
Right.
Just name them so we can get a good idea in brief where you're going. Or
well,
where you've just gone.
Where I'm going is that until we are able to somehow talk about the realities of what the world is for Americans, that's our greatest threat. And it's only going to get worse until you get enough people who are willing to, and this is the problem, are willing to really face the reality of what's going on. That's the greatest threat we have. And the example that I just used is I recall something very interesting.
But we don't need the example just yet. We'll get to these things a bit later. I just wanted an introductory idea from you in brief as to what you saw. So you did a good job, I think.
And I think that that's the strong point. We've got to be at a point where not only do black people understand what the problem is, but white people understand what the problem is, and people of other orientations think the problem is. Because right now, I can hardly believe some of the things I hear out of people, and I realize it's
Don't go there yet.
Oh, okay.
Because we're not yet
okay.
at the point where we are extrapolating. We're trying to just put a name to it. And that would be fine. A name and a couple of words to describe what you think the threat is and what you think the challenge is. And then we'll come back to it another day where we start stretching out.
The threat is cognitive dissonance. And the challenge that we face is learning how to talk to one another in reality and not
time. All right. I thank you very much for calling in and contributing today. Really. Some good points that you made. Did we hear from Albert yet? Albert, did we talk to you yet? Oh, yes, we have. I have his name and a check mark on that. Chris from Harlem, what would you say is the greatest threat to America today? What would you say is the greatest challenge?
I would say that, you see, Jason, family, I would say that the greatest threat is national apathy. There's no sense of national culture, as in, hello, my countrymen, my countrywoman, good day to you. The idea that it's all for self. So the lack of a national culture, because that allows for any ad campaign to sway any group, any number, or any amount of people in any direction at a whim.
Okay. So which is which? National apathy, national culture. Which is the threat? Which is a challenge?
One is the same. You said it wasn't an either or for me. I actually misspoke when I was saying that. It's more national culture, which is, you know, made up of diverse and a multitude of experiences. Of course, that's a given. That was something that we knew a long time ago. It's only now being monetized again in this next go around. But national culture and the threat is the lack of a core, a center in which the people can respond. We still haven't addressed the fact that a president was put in power, and I'm talking about Bush. We never dealt with what happened in the political side of Bush being installed as president. So,
all right, the concept, but you did well. You offered us quite a bit to think about, because, as I said, we're just starting this conversation and getting, you know, a quick lay of the land in terms of what people are thinking. And then we'll come back to it in a more fleshed out way, and we'll have some discussions and debates so we can ourselves define where we think we are as a nation. Thank you so much for your call today and your input. Michael from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Trice. It's always good to talk with you.
Oh, how are you, Michael?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there.
Good.
I think the greatest threat that we have is ideologies. And the greatest challenge is to live without them. We are being shaped
by
propaganda every day. The newspapers, the editorials, the television. We're being shaped by propaganda, by ideologies. Now, don't you think we could all solve the problem of poverty, homelessness, hunger? But there's an ideology that says we do it our way, and another ideology says, no, we do it this way. There's the left and the right. The left wants equality. The right wants freedom. But the left's equality is not equal, and the right's freedom is not freedom. So we're living in an illusion, and we're being shaped by propaganda, and that's our greatest challenge, is to be free of that, to deal with life objectively, independently, and be able to think for ourselves and not depend on ideologies. Do we need an ideology to live? Do we need a philosophy to live? No, we really don't. We can live. But because of these ideologies, we're prevented from getting things done. So basically, that's what I have to say.
Well, thank you very much. And you'll be hearing about that topic again pretty soon, because we're coming back to it. It's a very good analysis, and surprising too when you think about it. Thanks a lot. Willie from Brooklyn.
Good afternoon. My
Hello.
Family and Mr. Utrecht.
What do you say? What's the greatest threat to America? What is the greatest challenge?
To any country, it's truth. Any country, it's true. Truth. Because governments control the masses of the people through their lies.
So is that a challenge or a threat? Truth.
It's a threat. Because this, what you PRN is doing right now, and people like Farrakhan, Malcolm X, all those people, to reveal the truth to people. That's why they kill them.
So truth is a great threat. All right.
Absolutely.
What is the great challenge?
Oh, how do we one of the things I believe. The worst of all evil one human being could do to another is to take their mind. Of all the evil, is to take their mind. So some people may say, kill somebody. No, not kill somebody. Sometimes you kill people, you're doing them a favor. But when you take somebody's mind, just like
That sounds like a threat more than a challenge. You already identified... the threat is the lack of truth.
Right.
Or am I misunderstanding?
That is what has happened to us.
Okay. So we have two things that we have to pay attention to. What would you say is the threat, the greatest threat? What would you say is the greatest challenge?
For the American people to reclaim their mind so they could think again. On their own, without being told what to think.
Okay. So this would be the challenge.
Yes. And you guys, what you're doing on PRN, and you're doing that kind of work. This is why we know about this, should promote it so other people and the whole nation would be... begin to reclaim their mind.
Okay.
Because if you look at television, I mean, it's just absurd. It's insanity for any grown person to sit and watch and listen to these people. And it only happened because they've taken our minds.
So you've given us both the threat and the challenge.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks so much. All righty. Jeff from Staten Island, you'll close us out today. What would you say is the greatest threat to America? And what would you say is the greatest challenge?
Okay. This is my first time calling in. How you doing, lovely lady?
I'm so happy that you're calling in. Welcome.
All right. I would like to touch on what the previous caller said, and he was touching on something I would like to say. I think our greatest threat is education, and could be either a lack of or even too much of. And I'll say the greatest challenge would be honesty. And I say that because with us not being truthful with ourselves, you know, due to lack of education in some instances or even ignorance or even a willful choice to deny access of education to others, you can actually deny them the truth and lead them astray. But whereby if we were actually honest with our, you know, the challenge being if we were actually honest, we could educate people and they could see through a lot of the things that are holding us back. For instance, if this country were to devote its resources towards developing itself, its own country, imagine how much further along the lines we would be as far as progress is concerned, as opposed to devoting our resources elsewhere. So if we're honest, we could really progress. If we would educate, we would really progress. And a lot of these things would have to go. Those in office who are doing us incorrectly or improperly, you would be able to see through everything. The veil would be pulled off, and we would not have it for very long. So that's my contribution. What do you think?
Well, I thank you for it. What we're doing, I just want to explain again, today is just exploratory. That's what I could call it at best, exploratory, to get a sense from listeners themselves what's coming out of their own heads about these two questions. What is America's greatest threat and what is its greatest challenge? And it's where we will start. So what I will do in another week or two, I'll revisit all the answers and the notes that I took, and we'll get a sense of where people want to go with the discussion. And then we will start having these discussions. Because this is good stuff. We are seldom asked, really, except in terms of a vote, we're seldom asked to express our thoughts and making a choice about what it is we are thinking. But this is where we can start. We can have a very good conversation. We don't have to agree. That's not the point of it. The point of it is not necessarily to agree, but to get people used to the idea of going beyond these confined boundaries where we feel that we are allowed to think, and we're not supposed to go beyond those boundaries. Don't think beyond these boundaries. Somebody else will do that thinking. But we have to do it. And the best way to do it is to get a sense from everyone as to where their minds are. And the responses today have been excellent, I think, on the whole, excellent. And I believe very firmly in the intelligence of people. You know, they know what's going on. They have a sense of what justice is, what's right, and what's wrong. And we can find our way to some answers. Hopefully, those answers will inspire us to go even one step further and put these thoughts that we have presented to each other into some kind of a purposeful action. So here we go. This is the music that says the program has come to an end. Thank you so very much for your input today, and we'll meet again tomorrow and take another step. Bye-bye. Let's go.